Okay. Let's go ahead and have a word of prayer. Father, we're grateful for our evening. We commit those who are not here to you and your care. Remember Priscilla and her ongoing issues with her eye, and trust that you'll work that out to your perfection. Remember Karen and her strength, and commit her to your care too. Again, we're grateful for the evening. May we accomplish a great deal in it. We'll thank you in Christ's name. Amen.
Oh, Liz has an appointment just 1 o'clock, well, 20 after, one, almost something like 1:30 tomorrow to go for her. It's still bothering her. She's having a lot of trouble.
Oh, yeah.
So she's going to see the doctor, specialist for tomorrow.
ENT?
I guess, I don't know. I just talked to Mark briefly, 6 o'clock or something like that. Mm-hmm. That's how she's doing, so she's still having trouble. She's dizzy and everything else. It's no fun.
No. Yeah, it's interesting when the deck rolls a little, or a lot. I don't like that when that happens. Okay, we are have moved to that segment on Satan, and worked our way down. We technically left off at the bottom of 68. The only reason we left off at the bottom of 68 is you didn't have 69, nor did I. So, what I've done, the notes I handed out to you are for the rest of the class, to the end. I didn't whittle them like I wanted to. 103 pages, and there's a lot of pages of notes. It's got some more technical material in it, but I did whittle some technical out, but not a lot. And I did try to remember to transliterate, so you could find your way around that way. I got rid of some extra cross-reference material that most of you don't care about. I have English and Greek in there, so if you want to do some legwork there, I took out all my Smiths. So I had every word tagged to Smith and Smith's numbers with the charting, because that way, when I'm trying to think of ways to help people study, and Smith is still available, still in print, so now it's print in paper, not in hardcover, and I don't know how you can use Smith with it in paperback unless it's that kind of binding that'll lay flat on you in the paper. So this is, and we're going to move very quickly. I mentioned last time we spend more time in the sin nature because that's where most of our problems lie. We need to understand that's where they come from. We could spend a lot more time in Satan. Normally in the evening school classes, we have a separate class on Satan and demons, and that is its own purview. And so this material in this first section laps into that. I haven't taught that class, these are just auxiliary notes that I used in spiritual life class. That syllabus for today class is about 260 pages long of notes on the Christian life material. So really the history from, well, I mean, from one at the bottom of page 68 deals with who Satan is. We talked about the fact that he is a person, not a just a quality. He has personality. This is not a dualism. He's an entity. He has all of the elements of personality. And what does he do? I mean, he was a cherub. His name was Heliel. It is so funny. I have a Hebrew text that makes that look like a faith in front, so I tend to pronounce it that way, and it's a A. And that's the word day star, morning star, and in the Latin, Lucifer. And that, so we've talked a little bit about that. What happened, we learned from Revelation that he took with him from a third of the dragon with his tail, took a third of the angels. And we know those angels come from principalities and powers of those ranks, because it was Ephesians chapter 6, verses 11 and 12. We know he fell. Isaiah and Ezekiel both tell us about the fall of Satan. And it's kind of interesting when I relate to this that there are those who would resent a lot of this material because they deny that Satan is involved in Ezekiel 28 and Isaiah 14. And they don't understand Satan. And it's their theological premises that do that to them. So we know he fell. And I'm going very quickly here because this is really a part of another class. His freedom, he has freedom in his fall in that he still retains access to the amount of meeting in the third heaven. That's where he made accusations against Job when the sons of God stationed themselves in the third heaven, and it's called the Mount of Meeting. And so he's the accuser of the brethren, and we're not going to look at these because we come back to them. I mean, when I did these notes, these are the kind I could have cut out. I like them because they're easy to teach. I mean, if you pull these out you had a chance, so you could do this without going into it, and that's why it's kind of set up that way. I mean, my thing is I'm always a teacher's teacher, trying to teach somebody so they can teach better, help them out in every way I can. His failure, you see these Matthew and Luke account, his great plans are evident in his defeat on Calvary with the work of Christ. He tried to play with it, manipulate it. It's interesting when you get into Roman tradition that you have more of a manifestation of Satan in those events. When you see, I'm not sure whether I really recommend it or not, and that is Passion of the Christ by Mel Gibson. In that movie, you have this Satan creature. He's kind of like Gollum. And in Lord of the Rings, kind of a weird character. And he raises his head every now and then in that movie. Well, it's not from biblical accounts. It's from Roman Catholic tradition. And I had to see that movie twice because I had to figure it out the first time. I mean, see what was going on the first time, what their approach was. Then the second time, I could fit it into a structure. And what that movie was, unless, in case you hadn't heard, it essentially is a Roman Catholic progression of the Stations of the Cross. You have Veronica. I don't know. Here, I may be talking about school. Did you ever see that movie? Oh, brutal, man. I mean, it's a weird movie, but... Yeah, but there are elements in it, and I thought this... it followed closely, but then it didn't. And I started to think as I was following along, there are elements here that are not in the biblical account. And I started to think about it, and then we get to this Veronica thing. And then I started to put it together, and it was in the Roman Catholic Church, in their churches or some of their places, they have the Stations of the Cross, and you go from that progression. And what that is essentially a replica. They use the stations to teach the ignorant in the Middle Ages. The stations really are reflective of the Via Della Rosa in Jerusalem. And if you go to Jerusalem, don't expect anything super spectacular in those matters. You know, some of those stations on the Via Della Rosa are just a little sign up above the door. And then you have, Church of the Holy Sepulchre. That was goofy. Okay, his future, he's a loser. And it's always interesting when you think in these terms. When we deal with the sin nature, we know it's a loser. Because Christ died for that, and when we relate to our death with him in it, and our resurrection from it, that makes sense. But with Satan and his demons were defeated at Calvary. And you can pick that out of 12:31 of John, where, again, I'm just going quickly through it. And so he's already been judged at the cross. And you have it from John 16 of judgment because the prince of this world is judged, as well as some of these other passages I have here. Now, Satan is very effective today. Satan seems to be pretty cagey in about the ways he changes how he relates to created beings. He has supernatural powers to do things that replicate what God can do. He can will work in the man of lawlessness, and that man will be able to do signs, wonders, and miracles, just like the apostles did and like Christ did. And he can bring about healing. It's interesting, you go to Revelation and you see him as having an effective role in relationship to the man of lawlessness when he comes back to life in the second half of the trip. And so it's interesting, he has supernatural powers, not the powers of God, but he has powers that are far, far greater than ours as a cherub, though fallen. He is the God of this age, the prince of the authority of the air. So he's the one that's in charge of this world system. And I don't know what he drinks. Sometimes I think he is on psychotic drugs, because he's so contradictory within the system itself. And, you know, it seems like something is going one way and you can see the satanic abilities in it, and the next thing you know, it is anabolic. It's just the opposite. And he'll do the same group of people the same kind of thing. Before I left tonight, I was listening to an interview with Donald Rumsfeld, and the questions related to Iran and the circumstances back early, because Rumsfeld was involved with politics early before he became a part of the cabinet and Reagan administration, and, you know, all the things he did. You know, really a bright guy. But here the guy that Hugh Hewitt was some relative of yours.
Probably.
He's an interesting, Hugh Hewitt is in, the Reagan's administration. I think he had something to do with that. But anyway, he's a lawyer and he teaches at Pepperdine, anyway, one of the law schools in Southern California. And so he was asking some pretty good questions, you know. What did you do when it came to Iran? You knew that there were issues that related to the Ayatollahs. And what did they do? Well, he got out underneath that, on that, and he couldn't give good answers because he wasn't privy to things that went on. And it was almost like he said, I'm glad that I wasn't there to know about it, because things were just totally opposite of what, and that's where Satan's world system runs.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Question I have, if things are, from what we look at, we think things seem to be in disarray in the system, is there any evidence I've looked for and I haven't seen it, of Satan's, any evidence that he's, that as he gets toward the end, that he's frustrated or that he's, so to speak, at wit's end?
Well, the place where he gets frustrated is mid-trib.
Yeah, well, we know that.
You know, but beyond that, we don't have any other indication. And, but it would almost seem, again, you look at it today.
It seems like it's out of control, and so it looks like.
But he looks at our world today, and he looks at the good old USA. You know, you have the same old issue he had back in Genesis 4. You have a sin nature that's out of control, and he's got to be frustrated. Because he can't control it. And, I mean, all of these things are happening, and, you know, don't ask, don't tell. And now they get that, and today there was another movement on which campus, Columbia University or one, where they were boycotting the recruiters and, you know, having big fights with them. And it wasn't, I mean, it was not, it was over other things of a similar nature. And I'm glad we're driving cars and that kind of thing, or they'd be fighting over if you had a horse cavalry and that sort of thing. They're just so perverted in the way things are. He has powers over creatures in creation. You can see that out of Job. These are just general things. This matter of sickness, it's kind of interesting. I don't know if you've ever taken time when there's some major event or a major thing. You know, what was it, 19, was it 17 with the flu epidemic? Was it 17? Somewhere in there.
1918.
18. It was right there. Anyway, with all of the issues with influenza, killed millions of people. During World War One, the influenza killed more people than the war did. In the war, in one battle, they would kill a million and a half people. It was so bad. And you think, you know, Satan, either something got out of hand or something in that. And it was kind of interesting what that did to decimate the population. And, I mean, did he start it? And all of the issues that went with it. And in that, because I've done, I mean, I've studied results, especially of that flu. What's the name of the movie? Awakenings. The Oliver Sacks movie. I mean, it was based on his book, Awakenings. Awakenings was a documentary of a sort that was pretty well accepted about Parkinson's patients. And Oliver Sacks was part of the people who found out that you could help Parkinsonianism by using L-DOPA, which was... But the problem was, he came to learn, these guys were, you know, practically comatose, and the way they were, they couldn't speak, they were no motor skills of any kind. They'd take L-DOPA, and the next day, or the same day, they'd be up dancing and singing, or playing an accordion, these people. But then they found out that, I mean, they loved that, because you just sit there and barely breathing. And they found out every time that they got a hit of L-DOPA, they would go back into that state, that catatonic state, that was the word I was missing. And what would happen? L-DOPA wouldn't work as good the next time. And over a series of these things, what would happen? They would get, they'd be in a worse state than they were. And they were told the trade-off, because with Parkinson's, you know, your mind is working, but nothing else is working on your system. And so I was interesting to think, how in the world is Satan? Now you say, what in the world do you bring this up? Sacks found out that the people that were in that movie, almost every one of them that were institutionalized because of their Parkinson's, had had the flu. And this was a residual result of the flu. And I thought, you know, did Satan play this game and not realize that he botched it? And so there was a whole group of this specific kind of Parkinson's disease that came because they had the flu. We have something similar in a way, and that is, if you've had chickenpox. What do you get from chickenpox?
Shingles.
Shingles. And it's not just an old people's disease. It in my nightmare childhood, the one disease I remember was chickenpox. I mean, it just happened to be the vivid one that I remember. I was just at the wrong age, and I just remember all the itching and everything that went with it. And so the last time I saw my doctor, I said, what do you think about this shingles vaccine? Yeah, I think it sounds like a good idea for you. And he says, check it out at Walmart, I mean at Bi-Mar, they might have it, give you the shot. And I found out it's $400 or more.
This could be a serum that can't preserve it. They have to make it and bring it within like 72 hours, something like that.
And they bring it in frozen, and once you unfreeze it, you can't use it again.
Yeah, and it doesn't, I mean, once it's frozen, I mean, it doesn't keep very long anyway.
No. So I had this, I mean, he was good to me, because he said, okay, if you get it, and he said, I think it'll work, but this is what you're up against. 50% to get the vaccine will not get shingles. 25% will get shingles, but they will be in a reduced, they will have a reduced effect. Okay, 75%. Then 25% doesn't affect them at all. They'll get shingles and have just as bad as anybody else.
Did it from the vaccine?
No.
Oh.
No, I mean, it's just, I mean, it's not an absolute deterrent. Yeah, so if you didn't get it, and it's just, you know, we looked over when I have my problems with it, and so I'm still debating whether to do the shingles thing. I remember Levy Lovegren had shingles about the time he was, last 6 months of his life or so, and he was 90, how old was he? Died 97, I think. So he was the Lovegren drive family, and he was one miserable camper. And when he had problems with his eternal security, and he had shingles, it was awful hard to talk to him. Anyway, how did they get over there? Satan messes with a lot of things. Okay, he is involved with attacks of God's people. I mean, one thing you always have to, if you can remember, that little, I mean, the keys in this little chart, you know, our enemy's chart, that the flesh is an appetite that seeks gratification. Satan is an attack. So he's involved with aggressive warfare. And the world system is an appeal. So, I mean, that, to me, it summarizes in a way so it's easy to say, okay, this is how it's going to sneak up on me. Now, on this chart, if I was going to redo this, I would probably add a column, I mean, a row here, and I would emphasize under the flesh the fact that it appeals through the, I mean, it, the appetite is through the soul. It attacks through the soul. And let's get the right column. Satan, through the mind. And the world system is through, you know, the lust of the eyes and biological life and all of that. And so that's the only thing I think I would change on that chart, but we've got a jam pretty well filled already in that matter on that. So, okay, and you were right. I was on page 70. I'm on 5. I'm just sailing because I want to get rolling in the next segment. So Satan is actively trying to sabotage God in his program. Matthew 13 talks about him as being the one who sows tares. He is the hinderer of God's work among his people. He brings persecution against saints in Revelation 2. He accuses and slanders the brethren. Don't forget Revelation 12 is there. When he accuses, and by slander, he says you do things you don't do. Accuses, he tells you you, I mean, he calls you to task before God for something you did do. And so he will lie to God. I just can't fathom that he would do that. But he does. And he does that with us. And God knows that's the best part. He's not fooling anybody. But if we heard what he said we did, I don't know. We'd really be questioning ourselves, I think, as to whether we had or not. And then the attack of Ephesians 6. And 1 Peter 5:8, be sober, be vigilant, for your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. And so that kind of just gives us a general setup. I want to hit the attacks so we can understand them. First four attacks are in what we would call general categories. And that is, we have the three D's in independence. And the idea of independence from God is that circumstance where Satan said to Eve, have God's head. He questions God. And then he takes what God said and he plays with it. He says, you will be like Elohim. Well, what did that mean to Eve when he said, you're going to be like Elohim? You know, I just hate the G-O-D-S spelling in the A-B, the little gods. No. He said, you're going to be like Elohim. It's just as clean as can be in that matter. And so he comes and he says, you're going to be like him. And the attack of independence. If you can be like God, then you'll be able to make your own decisions. You will function in your own way. You can make your own plans, and it's okay. Now, don't forget, and I put it in that column, I've juggled it back and forth. Dr. Schaefer and I had some ongoing discussion, which was, to me, really hilarious, that I had put independence under the world system, too. Satan is the originator of it. And so he designs it to make people be independent of God. And so it was kind of interesting that I'd had that there for years and years and years and years. And then he said, you know, it's not really a satanic, I mean, not really, that's a satanic attack. And I said, yeah, but he designed the world system to make you independent. And it's not an attack in that case. It is a design, an organized, orderly design, so that you will function independent of God. Well, it took a while before he came back. I suppose you're right. And I had changed the chart that his name is on it, in that matter. And I had changed it. Now you can see the compromise I have on there. But it's the general overview. And so, in James chapter 4, verses 13 through 17, you can see I've got a nice little alliterated outline. But in 4:13, what does it say? It says, go to now, you that say, today or tomorrow we will go into such a city and continue there a year, and buy and sell, and get gain. Whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time, and then vanishes away. Poof. And so he says, you're making your own plans without consulting God and his plan and program in this matter. For that you ought to say, if the Lord will, we will live and do this or that. But now you rejoice in your boastings. All such boasting is evil. Therefore, to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, is to him it is sin. And so this is a section that you need to be dependent on God and act. Don't act independent. This conformity to the desirous will of God is really important. It's really important. I'm trying to remember when I first saw that, but I had to have been in high school. Once in a while, my dad would show me a letter that he had or had written. And so I knew this then. And because he was a pastor, he would get letters back and forth from other people and such. And I would see, he used it, and there would be DV. And there would often be D period, V period, caps. And I saw that, and it might be in the middle of a paragraph, it might be at the end, it might be the paragraph at the end that says, you know, this is what we anticipate DV. And DV is Deo, God, Volente, God willing. And so DV was a very, very, very common abbreviation. I would like to see it come back. And the only reason I'd like to see it come back is that I'd like people to think in those terms. You know, the Lord willing or God willing. We might make plans, but we don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. You know, I mean, often, because Dale and I are in such a rut, you know, I'll see you in the morning, God willing. Because we might be somewhere else in the morning. Won't have to walk then. Then we'll just travel in a different manner. In that. And so, to be dependent upon God and know that we're dependent on God. Now, just because we say God willing doesn't mean we're reconforming to his will, but at least we're thinking about it. And I'd rather have somebody think about it. And I do throw that in some of my letters sometimes. Sometimes I do it, and I've never had anybody come back that I didn't think whoever would read it might know what it was, but I did it so they would be curious enough to try to find out. And in some of the older dictionaries, you can look up DV and have it. because that was a major thing for, I don't know how long, probably throughout the late 1700s, clear up into the early 1900s at least. So, anyway, free on that. I've got a letter in the book somewhere. I was trying to remember if there was a DV in that letter that a well-known person had written. So this thing of being dependent upon God, Satan says, you can do what you want. And the old sin nature says, sure I can. And Satan says, you can do it better. By then the sin nature says, yeah, come what you can. And so the next thing you know, you've become susceptible to the satanic attack. You act independent and you just live and move into the whole realm of the sin nature. Then, you know, Satan has moved you in into that matter, and that's important for us to understand. And we won't go to Philippians 2, 13. In Job 3, we have this matter of disappointment. God doesn't take care of me like he says he does. I am so disappointed, you look at the three D's. You have disappointment, discouragement, and doubt. They all have this self-centered kind of thing. Satan's trying to make you think that you are something special outside of the grace of God, and that's his goal. And so, and then when we say God doesn't treat me the way I that he says he does, really what we're trying to say, and I made it put the note in here, it didn't work out the way I wanted it to. And so you're disappointed. And Job 3, and I'm going to take the moment or two to look at some of these Job passages, because they're so, I mean, Satan did this early. And he manipulated and played. Job chapter 3, and where I am is, Brenda's keeping track of me. We're in D2. R2-D2. I want to go and work through Job 3 and these first 13 verses, because not only do they deal with this thing of disappointment, but discouragement. And I'll pull into that as we get down to about verse 11. After this, Job opened his mouth and he cursed his day. The word curse here is not the normal kind of Old Testament curse. It's a word to treat it or to slight the day. So as far as a curse, there's no oath here involved or anything. He treats it as not of very much value. And the Hebrew root here, the root kalal, has the idea to be slight and to treat it as something without any weight. And Job spake, and he said, let the day perish wherein I was born, and the night in which it was said there is a man-child conceived. And he said, let's just take the calendar. You know, you can get pretty discouraged and say, hey, if I had never been conceived and I had never been born. It's interesting. In this circumstance, this thing, the idea of conception, I think they had some sense of it. But as far as understanding the gender of a baby at that time, when did you determine it? It was determined at the moment of birth. It's really been kind of interesting to me. I'm learning some of the latest and greatest in that area. Lord willing, I'm going to be a grandpa in about 6 months. And so...
You're already a grandpa.
By my son. And, you know, these are not little kids. You know, I mean, they're, you know, they should be having grandkids almost. And so, they are expecting, and, see, I can say that now. There was this rule nobody knows except for the terrible twosome. There were only two of us that knew until after the 12th week. And then that was dependent upon testing on the viability of everything. And so they went through this detailed genetic testing. So they did all the chromosomal stuff. And huge amount of tests, terribly expensive. But when you're in the right place and you have good insurance, it works. And so what happened, they went through all of these tests. And they do that for genetic defects.
High-risk people, particularly people that are older.
Yeah, and that's one reason they were there and checked it out. And it was so interesting, 12 weeks in, and David says, we're going to have a boy. And it was kind of funny because they knew somebody else who was expecting. And they know the gender absolutely because XY or X, the chromosomes are, no, there's no question. So they know that's what's happening. Whereas in the other case, they do it with a sonogram, and you have a, 50%?
It may or may not be right.
Yeah. So you still don't buy blue or pink, buy yellow.
People have been very disappointed.
No, I'm saying, the blue's for the boys, the pink's for the girls, and yellow is, you don't know.
Everyone wears yellow.
Yeah. But, it was interesting to, I think of it here. Job says, I wish that I had just never even been twinkle in my father's eye with his whole concept. Let that day be darkness, let not God regard it from above. Don't let him make that special. The word regard is the word barash, which means to see. Don't him make it a place where it's a special time. Neither let the light shine upon it. He wanted to be, he didn't want to be conceived, and then he wanted to be stillborn if he was going to be born. So, can you get more discouraged than that? That whole idea, you want to, this is not like Nicodemus saying, can I re-enter my mother's womb? He just said, I wish I had never been born. And so he is so discouraged and so down and full of doubt. And then it says, let the darkness and the shadow of death. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? A little bit like Psalm 23. The shadow of death stain it. What's that word mean? I'm trying to remember.
Says claim it.
Says claim it?
Yeah.
Okay, or challenge it. I'm looking for my root. Well, that's interesting. Gael. It's a word for, that's a fat word. Goel is a kinsman redeemer. Gael is to be, there's about four different, Brown, Dragon, or Briggs gives us three separate definitions of that root. You didn't need to know that. Let the God dwell upon it, or upon it. Let the darkness of the day terrify it. As for that night, let darkness seize upon it. Let not it be joined unto the days of the year. Let it not come into the number of months. He said, just write that off the calendar. Wipe it clear off. Lo, let that night be solitary and solitary, I'm trying to think of some other definitions. That works okay. There's a better word for it. I'm not getting it. Let no joyful voice come therein. Let them curse if they curse the day who are ready to raise up their mourning. It's kind of interesting, that word that's translated mourning. I remember back in Don's day, and the guys in, because I had several classes where they wrote papers on this word, and it's the word Leviathan. Here it says, who make ready to raise up or make ready Leviathan. And we had, I mean, it's always a fun interpretive passage. I'm telling you these things you don't care about. Let the stars of the twilight thereof be dark. Let it look for light, but have done. Neither let it see the eyelids of the day, of the dawn. When it says dawning, it's the word for eyelids. And it's coming, the eyelids of the dawn. Not even that little squint of light. That's being miserable, isn't it? Because it shut not upon the doors of my mother's womb, nor hid sorrow from mine eyes, or the word trouble. Why died I not from the womb? Why didn't I die? Why did I? Let's see, I'm trying to translate it. Why did I not expire? Expire is a good way to translate this. Give up the ghost, and it feels good that it's when I came out of the womb. And so here that's how discouragement and doubt can climb on someone's back. And what am I born for? What am I here for? What in the world is God trying to do? May this not happen. And you can get down like that. And Satan tries to get you to look at things. What am I here for? You know, I'm not any good for anybody or for anything. And so Satan does that. And he knows your buttons. And he can push them. Why did the knees prevent me? Why did the knees come in front of me? Or why the breast that I should suck? For now should I have been lain still and been quiet, I should have slept, then had I been at rest. If I died before I was born, I'd be in better shape than I am now. So, I mean, I wanted to read that. That is just a downer, downer, downer. And, people can get that way. And I've known folks that have had issues of that kind. Because they are so full of doubt and so full of discouragement, and Satan will come and will attack and will get them down. And then I've had some real interesting opportunities to deal with people that have had ongoing issues of that kind in that matter. And still have some ongoing sharing in with someone in California that tends to have some pretty deep discouragement, not doubt in that case, interestingly enough. But, okay, I put some Greek in here under the word doubt. You can see these are words that relate to a lot of questioning words, but I just put them in here, so if you wanted to hustle them, you could in this matter. And it just goes right back, did God really say, did God really mean what he said? And doubt counters faith. It goes against your faith. It takes away the promise. It takes away the substantiation of the promise. And so remember, it's promise.
Hope,
faith. So when we understand that order, so what it does, I mean, both doubt and discouragement can take, it's like pulling the promise away. And Satan tends to work that way. And the interesting thing is sometimes there's a main promise that God keeps in your mind so that when Satan throws some of these things at you, I kind of am going to have to pull that out and bring it. That's a problem. My note business is terrible. I just have too many that I can bring. But I'll try to remember to bring the utterances since we're here. What I did, these guys know what I'm talking about, but a number of years ago, when I went through, I did this series on the gospel and growth, and it was designed to show how through the facts of the gospel you could teach a new believer the spiritual life and how those work, and we spent 2 years on it. But when I got to Ephesians 6 and the utterances, I was led to pick some passages. I mean, just I had a passage for each one of the attacks of Satan, and I printed it out and handed it out as a foldover. I don't happen to have one with my I put too many things in my Bible, so I'm just turning a little light. And so, anyway, I had these all listed in the category, and we went through it and read them and said, now these are just to stimulate you, because there are a lot more, but at least these are key verses. And it was interesting. If you have one verse sometimes and you have a susceptibility to satanic attack, that utterance that is there often is what will keep you where you need to be. You put the armor on, you stand, and then you use the shield of faith, and you have the sword of the Spirit, which is the utterance of God. And that utterance is as much for you as it is for Satan. That's a little short sword on it. And so I'll try to remember to bring that. I keep forgetting. I have these things that I've used over the years, and they're so handy. And I remember the day, I'll not forget the day, that I finished that sermon and I handed out that material and we went through it. And it was in the evening, my phone rang. And somebody called me and he said, I've got to tell you something. You handed out that list. And he said, when we went home from church, we got slammed by satanic attack. And he said it was just really severe and serious. And he said, open my Bible, and in the bulletin was that list. And we identified the attack, went to that passage of Scripture, and thought through the armor, and he said, that handout helped us with, and it would just been hours. You know? And I felt, wow, you know, it's God's Word, but there's a lot more than just the few passages. So I'll try to remember to bring that, because it's so handy to have in that matter. And it was funny, that was one of those deals where I was a little concerned about doing it. I mean, I didn't know. You know, it was a little more general than I wanted. And over the years since that was first done, it has been used of God in a huge number of ways, where it's easy. Sometimes people just need to have it pointed out. See, here's a verse. This is what you're kind of looking for. And then when something happens, you can make your own little list to go with it. But it helps. Okay. So doubt, and it's a relationship to faith. And we need to be careful. Satan wants us to do things that are doubting. And Romans 14 says, whatever you do, doubting to him is a sin. Sin can come from doubt so often. Okay, now I'm down on letter number 5 on page 71. I have a list of words that relate to fear. The list that you have of these terms in bundles like this are terms that I use and have used in preparing this material in the past. I mean, we know about phobos, because there's all kinds of phobia going around. But then we don't always know these dialogue terms. There are not many of them. We only have 3 of, or 5 of them. And so I'm just giving you the basics so you have them handy if you're interested in pursuing it. And so this is cowardice in spiritual things. Peter was attacked by Satan before his great salvation, and he boasted that, you know, he would stand by the Lord even to death, and we know the rest of the story. He's already following afar off, and then he takes these little girls, stir him up, and Satan got a hold of them, and he denied him thrice, and his motives were perfect. but he just didn't have the capability. What would have happened to Peter if that had happened 2 months later? You know, it's kind of interesting when you think about it. Why did I say 2 months later?
Yes,
after Pentecost. You know, was he well enough equipped as the key apostle to be confronted in a similar manner? I think he would have been. I don't know. I mean, I don't have the details, except I know what he did in Acts 2 and 3 and 4. Now, I saw what he did. He wasn't a wimp. He wasn't afraid of anything. And he was the guy that stood there and looked those Jews in the face and said, "You did it." And knowing that he could have followed his way to a tomb in that matter. And so Christ attributes it to Satan in Luke 22. Let's see. Paul, Mars Hill, do we need to go through all of that? I'm trying, like I said, I'm trying to move along, and you can look at these passages. Timothy, he was timid about using the gift of evangelism. You see that in verse 7. He had fear of using a gift. My quick run through on Timothy, I believe Timothy was an apostle. I think he's very clearly that. The reason I believe that he received the gift of evangelism by the laying on of hands of the steward of the dispensation was because he was younger, and as the temporary gifts ran out, there was not going to be a use for his apostle gift as he got a lot older. He's the youngest of the apostles. And so I believe that may have been the reason God gave him that extra gift. And so that's what happened. I've already quoted 1 Peter 5:8 tonight. The devil, like a roaring lion. He roars. Why do lions roar? Because they're hungry. Everybody knows that. Yeah. Yeah, the whole reason a lion roars is to freeze his prey. That is to scare an animal so that it is easily caught. It's always funny because the lion that roars and does the most of the hunting is the female lion. Just because MGM likes to use a male lion to roar, it's always funny that I remember it. MGM had a hotel in Reno. It's changed names about four times in the last 30 years. It was Bally's, and it was, anyway, it doesn't make any difference. But they had an old Motley lion downstairs, and you get your picture taken with it. And whoever trained this lion, trained it so that it would roar once in a while. And its roar was big enough, loud enough, but down on the ground floor, or in the basement kind of thing, there was a whole bunch of shops and stuff down there. But it would roar enough so you could hear it up on the main floor in the casino. And, of course, kids couldn't go up on that floor unless you were going to a restaurant or whatever. And it was always interesting. It almost seemed like they knew how to make it when that lion needed to roar so they could draw people in downstairs. It was like the magnet to draw people in. Never knew what happened to that lion. But it was a case of the Motley lion. But he would roar. The two words for fear, delia, has the idea is it's held in the mind and becomes a passion, and it can become pure phobos, which is a passion that overwhelms in that matter. Okay, we're going to stop here with lying. It's kind of funny when I think about it. All the work that I have done in the last 2 weeks on lying, and here we are with it here. The work, and you notice everything here is in Greek, and most of what I was doing, like on Sunday, was out of the Old Testament, because it's talking about there were lying prophets, and now there will be lying teachers. So, we'll be back here in this matter of lying and those issues. And like I said, I'm going to try to keep clicking along here so that we will get, we've got to get through here so we can, I mean, look at the calendar, which is probably okay.
Thank you, Father, for the evening. Again, we're thankful we can trust in you. May you strengthen us, guide us, give us rest. And should you tarry in sending the Son, may we be useful instruments of yours as we face tomorrow. We'll thank you in Christ's name. Amen.